Do you ever love something that's flawed, Adolin? Isn't everything flawed? I suppose it is, Gezmal said. Well, I love the Empire. I love that our people have stood for thousands of years against invaders with more shards. I love that we have produced writing and art, standing as a light against the twin tides of ignorance and lies. I love that in Aesir, a thief can become emperor, that any person who just dedicates themselves can take the tests and rise high. I love the way we have reasons for what we do. Yes, the weight of those reasons might create books full of bureaucracy. Yes, it might get unwieldy. Yes, it might hurt you now and then. But everything you love is going to hurt you now and then, because it is flawed. There should obviously be a threshold for being hurt. We haven't reached mine yet. The laws say that a man who did what I did needs to be punished. Maybe the law should change, but I accept what has happened. Because, Adolin, I guarantee that every other soldier in our military, even those who think I was a monster for putting the Emperor in danger, understands. Accepting your punishment with decorum is a mark of respect for the thing we all love. Welcome back to Following Note on a Stormlight Podcast. This week is episode 259, and we are in chapters 91 through 95 of Wind and Truth in day 8, I believe. Paul, how are you?
I'm doing great. I try to put some thought into my titles each week, sometimes, not every time is high effort, but I was really proud of my title today. I'm a Towers Grandmaster on the topic of, you know, like a chess grandmaster, right? Like global, whatever the titles are. But that, I'm sure they'd have some kind of Towers tournaments on Roshar. So, yeah, I'm a grandmaster at that on Roshar.
And if they wouldn't, you would organize it.
Yes, and win. And yes, be the champion for sure. So, call me Magnus Carlsen. But on Roshar or something like that. I don't know.
Magnus, so. Adolin. All right, Elliot, how are you?
Paul is very good at strategy board games and things like that. I've played against him, so I would not doubt the Towers Grandmaster.
I do have a natural affinity for lots of card and strategy games. This is true. I don't think anyone will get this reference, but if you do, you're my favorite, and please comment if you play a little game called Mechabellum. If anyone out there has played it, let me know. It's fantastic, amazing, one of the best strategy games ever. If you haven't played it, go play it. It's fantastic. Anyways, continuing.
How I'm actually doing is quite well. I'm enjoying these chapters. We've said a few times that it's starting to really get going in this book, so I'm not going to say that again, but we do get some big, long-awaited drops in these chapters. It is happening.
Yeah. I felt like saying this last episode, but I definitely going to say this episode. We're getting all of the expected reveals now. We're getting everything that we've predicted, that we've been able to see coming, that has been planted. I think we're in for like a whole bunch of crazy stuff that there's no way we could have even predicted ever in the last 2 days. But Elliot, we have chapters 91 through 95. We actually covered some good ground this week for all you people crying that we don't cover enough chapters.
Rightfully so, but I should add.
Paul's getting bored over there.
I do have a friend who was not caught up with us, but has since caught up with us since we've been in this book. And he's like, do I really have to wait a week to like get y'all to do three chapters? Like, it's crazy. So I think the benefit of this podcast is coming from behind, like being not caught up and getting to actually pound through, go through these books quick. So we will one day finish this and it will be awesome.
Elliot, do you have a summary?
I do, and buckle up because a lot happens in these chapters. So, 91. Dalinar still bouncing around in various visions of the spiritual realm. Odium is feeding these to him specifically, making him relive some not so great moments in chapter 91. The moment we get is when Dalinar went and beat up Elokar, basically to make a power statement to say, no, I'm in charge here. Dalinar relives it, however, as Elokar, and feels a lot of the emotions that Elokar was feeling in that moment. And Gavinor is there watching the entire time. That can't be good. Then we jump over to Odium and Yasna. We actually get the conversation between the two of them. Odium gives her a classic, like, villain monologue. Let me explain to you all the things that I'm going to do, and I thought I'd make a courtesy of letting you know so that you can prepare.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, sure, Odium.
It's because he knows how Yasna's going to react to it. Sure. It's the double bluff on Yasna. I actually love that.
We'll see. Anyway, apparently there's going to be a battle of wits for trying to convince Thalen City to join each side. So Yasna and Taravangian Odium are apparently going to have a debate coming up here soon, I guess. Chapter 91 is still going as we jump over to Venli, who has been caught by the singers, specifically the fused L, who looks quite impressive and threatening, and kind of maybe puts a similar ultimatum down in front of her, basically saying, hey, you need to join our side or I'll crush you, or something to that effect, basically. But Venli does negotiate for some time to think about it, so she is left in somewhat a little bit of peace to decide what they're going to do. Chapter 92 is a strange one. For the entirety of the chapter, Zeth is falling. First up, and then down. And that's chapter 92. Chapter 93, Shallan is facing
past. Last episode, you went on a monologue about how there's no visual descriptors, and the entire chapter of 92 is a visual descriptor of how the city looks.
Oh, yeah. I enjoyed every second of it.
He's talking about the events that happened.
Nothing actually happened. And that's
Zeth falls up and Zeth falls down. So
okay. Yeah. All right. Well.
I liked the chapter. I'm not digging on it. It was a good one. And not a lot happened, which is fine. 93. Shallan. This is the chapter. This is the big one. Shallan faces her past. And we learn no less than the identity of Shallan's mother is indeed, as has long been predicted by many in the fan base, to be the Herald Chanarach. Shallan, we could see several details of the scene that where Shallan kills her mother that I think were not known before, definitely changed the perspective of what exactly went down there. There's a few other Easter eggs, I think, buried in this chapter as well. Classic Sanderson. Big old scene, big reveal. And he snuck a few things in here too, I think. I'm sure we'll talk quite a bit about it. 94 is another big one. Zeth in the past finally meets the voice. And it is indeed an unmade. Although I did not catch a name. I don't think we got a name. I mean, there's only one unmade left at this point, I think, but it is an unmade. The unmade is doing rather nasty things to Spren in its little cave in the back of the place. And Zeth walks in, gets told, your moment has come to join me, Zeth. And Zeth says, nope, and turns and runs. And that's it for chapter 94. 95 is Adolin. At first, he's getting his peg leg fitted for at least helping him walk. And then he ends up playing Towers with Yonagon. They talk quite a bit. And then there's a sequence where he goes and talks to the son of General Kushkam, who got demoted for helping Yonagon. And Adolin doesn't like the injustice of that. And they kind of talk through that. And have some actually really interesting conversation there. Second half of 95 is modern day Zeth, and he's kind of come to the decision point. Am I going to walk this path that Nail has apparently set before me to become a herald, or do I do what maybe Kaladin is pushing me to do and walk away from all this and decide that I shouldn't be following the directions of a crazy man like Nail? So wrestling with a lot of those different things and trying to figure out what all they need to do, has a conversation with his Spren about the whole thing. His Spren reveals some information, but not all, refuses to answer some of the questions. So still some questions left unanswered there. And I think that gets us to the end of 95.
Thank you all so much for listening this week. Next week, we'll be talking about chapters 96 through...
Yes. Guess if you can guess our chapter split for next week.
I got no idea. I'm going to guess 96 to nice even 100, but that doesn't matter too much.
I'll tell you at the end of the episode.
Okay.
All right.
That's good.
Paul, what's your two words?
Thank you for asking, Trevor. And please don't get mad at me because one of them has a little hyphen in the middle, and that's fine. Okay. No need to get upset. My two words are legacy and trust issues. Hyphenated. You laugh. Yeah. You laugh. But it's legit. Okay. Okay. Trust issues is because of Gavinor in our Dalinar chapter. It is like, this was a crazy attack from Odium of making Gavinor watch the historical event of Dalinar beating up Elokar, his father. That's like, how do you explain that to a really young child? Like, it's not what it looks like, you know? Like, that's a tough one to come back from. Really tough. Definitely set against some deep-seated, I'm sure, trust issues for Gavinor. Trevor, if you want to get mad at me on that word, that's fine. I'm sorry, I was cutting you off. I was trying to, be funny. But legacy, my other word, is good old Chanarach with her daughter, Shallan, making the whole Herald thing a legacy, if you will. Making it, Shallan's going to replace me. Maybe Shallan's daughter one day will replace her. Not actually saying that far, but I thought it was interesting. Like, I'm going to raise a child and they are going to replace me. That was interesting. So, like, a little family legacy going on here. The start of it.
I have so many questions on that one liner from Chanarach, but Elliot, do you have two words?
I do. I didn't even try to come up with two words to try and tackle all the really big things that happen in these chapters. So I went a little off the beaten track, and my two words are falling and monologue for reasons I kind of already harped on in my chapter description.
I want to briefly add, Elliot, what you said is exactly how I'm feeling. If there's not two words to summarize this set of chapters, there's so much going on, so many characters, so many crazy things. There wasn't just like these two words really sum up the entire episode well. I feel like I need two words per chapter to do that.
And hence why we've only covered three chapters at a time for this book, Paul. All right, let's start at the top and start going. Chapter 91, Dalinar relives the vision as Elokar, and then one of the guards that Dalinar calls as Elokar is Gavinor, and Gavinor sees Dalinar beating up Dalinar, who's Elokar. Hope you were catching that.
It's all clear.
Yep. Yeah. Got it. Okay. So, current day Dalinar, CD, is CDD, current day Dalinar, is in Elokar's shoes and is getting impressions of the feelings of the person he's embodying at the time. And Elokar, poor guy, has the thought, as Dalinar is beating him up, at the end of the Way of Kings and says, man, Dalinar is going to come after me. At least Alethkar will be better for it, and Dalinar will lead better than I will. And I'm like, oh man, this character died 2.5 books ago, and I'm still getting gut punches from Alethkar. Did you guys have any thoughts on the Alethkar internal dialogue, real quick?
I think this brought back to mind something we talked about, I think, multiple times in some of the early books. Of we didn't necessarily jump on this as something Dalinar should not have done. I think in the time we might have even said we thought it was good that Dalinar was forcefully taking control. But getting another perspective on it really does kind of bring you back to this was probably not the best way for Dalinar to handle this. And I think Dalinar even knows that, and maybe even knew it at the time. Of he views himself as a blunt instrument who kind of solves problems through brute force, and that's about all he can do. But I know we said this multiple times through various things that Dalinar had done, like present day Dalinar. I know what we said was, if this was anyone but Dalinar doing this, we wouldn't be okay with this. And we trusted Dalinar because we knew his intentions were good and his morals were fairly solid. He was trying to do honorable things. He was trying to help those around him. He was doing things for the right reasons. But this was maybe a case of getting to see what this was doing to Alethkar's emotions and his confidence, and kind of shattering him, even though he was trying to be a better king. I don't know. Put another perspective on it for me. Little gut punching.
Yeah, I'm really glad you point that out. You're right. Like that, and I think most people would point at Adolin killing Sadeas, right? Was not certainly not honorable, certainly not a good thing to do, but given the context and the how much people are going to loathe Sadeas, how much people were probably really annoyed with Alethkar, especially at this time in the story, you're like, yeah, go punch him, knock some sense into him, you know? Like, it kind of felt gratifying, you know? But you're right. You're right. Looking at this, seeing, understanding the position and thoughts that Alethkar has, it makes you feel kind of bad. And you're absolutely right. It's easy to jump on the protagonist doing these things is in the right. You know, it's also hard because we know the story thus far with this being part of reality, what has happened. And so I'm like, what is the other way? And I'm like, you know, obviously that changed the story probably dramatically, but yeah, I like what you're pointing out. And yeah, it absolutely puts it in a different light, especially seeing this and seeing Gavinor be here. And Gavinor, the one who's like, of course, rightfully so, Alethkar sympathizer number one, of like, you know, he in his mind, you know, of course, Alethkar was a wonderful king and all these things, you know, he's very young, very little. But seeing that, then it doesn't feel so gratifying to watch Alethkar kind of get knocked around a bit whenever his son is watching, you know, like it absolutely put this whole scene in a new light. And yeah, it's kind of here for it. I thought it was a good scene. And then also story-wise, the fact that Odium is bringing this scene and using it to manipulate Gavinor felt like a Grandmaster Towers player level move. You know what I mean? Like
That's rich coming from a Grandmaster Towers player.
It is, yeah, that was genius. Man, no one could think of anything better than that, right? Peak genius, Towers Grandmaster player. This chapter hit hard, in my opinion. I don't we've had lots of to say about Gavinor and what might be happening, how he might be corrupted, all this stuff. And like this was this is a heavy hit, I feel like. They're gonna play swords, you know.
All right, Paul, I get to be a contrarian to you for once. Let me
once. It's happened several times. Anyways.
Let me back up a second and say, for the record, what Adolin did to Sadeas was wrong. And I still think what Dalinar is doing to Elokar here is correct for the correct reasons. And what Adolin is doing is incorrect for the incorrect reasons. Within the context of this scene that Gavinor is not getting, that's the key point here, is Elokar is expending the kingdom's resources to go after something he knows is incorrect with the saddle girth, and getting Dalinar to expend resources on that, putting himself vulnerable to Sadeas and losing men because of it, and his shard blade and all of that. Now, Gavinor doesn't know any of that. So, obviously, Gavinor seeing this scene out of context is shocking for a five-year-old. Of course it is. Paul, you mentioned that this is a grand masterstroke from Odium. I have a problem with this if this is setting up Gavinor to be the champion, which I think it is. I would be very surprised at this point if Gavinor is not the champion. Because Gavinor has been here this whole time, why? We haven't been told. Now Odium is manipulating him. Oh, I've been hearing Dad's voice, blah, blah, blah. Teravangian didn't know they were in the spiritual realm until yesterday, I think, and is starting to mess with them like full on just now in day 8. There is no way. Correction. I have not been set up correctly to think that Odium knew about this to set this up so that Gavinor would be the champion. Now, if it's somehow revealed that Odium manipulated the Stormfather to then manipulate Dalinar to go into the spiritual realm, then I would be fine with it. That this is all of Odium's Grandmaster plan. But as things stand right now, Odium is taking advantage of Gavinor being here quite literally in the 11th hour, the day before we're picking our champion and going after each other. That I'm struggling with this one, that this was all a grand plan from Odium. He didn't know they were in the spiritual realm, or at least we've been told that until yesterday.
So quick thing. I agree with what you're saying, but I think there's a slight difference. Okay, so we know that Odium is trying to go after Dalinar. He's not been like, Gavinor is the key to this. I want to go after Gavinor. But as he's going after Dalinar now, after he's made his decision, his little statement recently that I'm going to attack Dalinar, doesn't he say, he says, like, I need Dalinar on my side whether or not this works out. Like, whether or not this works out. He's going after Dalinar. Then if he sees Gavinor, he's like, well, that's low-hanging fruit of a way to manipulate. So we see this, and it very highly is being shown this, like, okay, now Gavinor does not have full trust in Dalinar. But that may more so be the bargaining chip the other way around, that he's going to use Gavinor, you know, hostage situation potentially with Gavinor to get Dalinar to agree to something or something along those lines, more so than like Gavinor's gonna be my champion. That was the plan from the beginning, because Dalinar wouldn't do that. But like now he is specifically going after Dalinar, and Gavinor being here is the free manipulation, you know, like leverage piece, you know, that he has. So, yeah.
Yes. I agree with you. but there seem to be quite a few convenient ducks in a row that Odium is shooting here. And
I agree with that.
I have issue with that.
I agree with that. I think if Gavinor wasn't here, then he'd be focusing on other stuff. But Gavinor may like be the convenient piece that will actually get somewhere with. Like, Dalinor's, I feel like, made it through all these visions. Like, the worst days of his life, like, replayed out for him. And he's been, I mean, hurt, but fine, you know? But this is another piece he could use. But yeah, it is awfully convenient. I absolutely grant you that. You can meta game it a little bit and look at, yeah, Gavinor has been really all throughout this book. Why? He's been all throughout this book. We've talked about him like 100 times going through this book, and it's got to be a crux of something. We don't know exactly which way, but in some way to try to break or hurt or make Dalinar agree to something he doesn't want to agree to or something. Like, it's the soft spot, like how Taravangian was like, oh yeah, Carbranth is my, like, soft spot. Gonna destroy it. Dalinar's not gonna do that, obviously. He's like, you know, so it is a below-the-belt hit, is what it feels like. A convenient below-the-belt hit opening up. Which I grant you is not necessarily a Towers Grandmaster move. Maybe he's just like a average Towers player, not quite on my level, but you know.
I think we should revisit this when we know who the champions are. I'm not convinced this is necessarily what this is pointing to. It, a lot of things would fit in. I mean, it's theories we talked about before we even started this book. So this could be the first steps along that path, but I'm not so sure. I think we need to revisit it later. But I could see the issue that you're hanging up on, Trevor, but there's a lot of other ways this could pan out, I think, that would make this make sense.
Sure. All right. Leshwe gets caught red-handed from L, and they're underneath the Shattered Plains. They just found Odium's perpendicularity, except conveniently shut the door right before L showed up. So the perpendicularity hasn't been revealed to the singers, unless they already know it's there, maybe? I don't know. Because I assume Odium knows it's there. But anyway, L offers the listeners a clean slate. Hey, come join us. We won't punish you, blah, blah, blah. Or at least in spoken word, he offers that. And then Leshwe brings up the idea of, hey, maybe we should take him up on this because we've got a new Odium now. We could just, you know, go back and like nothing ever happened, which is not where I thought Leshwe's story was going to go. But being tempted by her previous powers, I think that's an interesting idea to entertain. What do you guys think?
I think the description of L was different than anything we'd had so far. He gets quite the aggressive description with these metal horns and metal carapace that he's got towering over them. This is a new L, I think, from what we've seen. And this dude was already kind of up on the list of, you know, watch out for him. Now he's okay, full general mode, I guess.
Someone's got L is spiked on their bingo board, don't they?
We do. I forget who has that. It might be me, which this felt like a step not in that direction.
Yeah.
Actually, like a lot of metal involved, but no talk of being spiked. More just he's got carapace just like all the other fused. Oh, but his is metal somehow.
Yeah. Taravangian gives Yasna the speech, Elliot. What are your thoughts on the villain speech?
Okay, so here's what he says basically. So he appears to Yasta. Big reveal. Odium is Taravangian. What? like Paul, I think you were talking about this a little bit in the last episode. Yasna is not quite sure whether to believe this or not. Is this Odium, like Ray's Odium, messing with them, showing up as Teravangian? I think she settles on, she thinks this is actually Teravangian, big reveal. And Teravangian says, I'm going to take matters into my own hands for Thalen City. You discovered my ruse. Good job, you. So I'm here in person to deal with this now. I'm going to make my case to Queen Fen that she should join my side. So here's your heads up to start preparing your argument. We're going to have a great debate, a confrontation, and you better come prepared because I've got a ironclad case that's going to convince Queen Fen to join my side. Good luck. Just wanted to offer you the courtesy and time to prepare. And I'm sitting over here going, okay, either that's really cheesy, or Odium absolutely has something else up his sleeve.
This kind of hit for me a little bit. Like, for okay, one, I feel like this has given us the purpose for Yasna. Like we said, Yasna has kind of been bounced around between a couple places and roles and things in this book, and it hasn't been clear to me what her real major part in this story, what her part to play in this story is. And this like was like, okay, there it is, dropped right out front. That's what it is. It's going to be around this case, which is quite fitting that hers would not just be a battle like Adolin and Sigzil have faced, but a battle of the minds and logic and law and persuasion and what's the term for it? I know they do it in school, right? The
rhetoric? Debate.
It's debate or whatever. Yeah, they have like their little debate competitions. That's what this is. This is like the pinnacle of that, which feels fitting, feels I'm really curious to see what these arguments are. I'm really curious to see what Odium is bringing. I'm curious to see what Yasna tries to bring back in response. I feel like this is, Trevor, you mentioned, like, I feel like we've gotten all the expected reveals, but that we're probably around the corner from really crazy, unexpected reveals. I think this is lobbing one of those up to be like a really unexpected thing. Queen Fen has been a more minor role in our story, but her decision on this could make a big sway, right? Like, could be quite monumental. And I'm just very curious. This is one of those that I don't even have good predictions. I just really want to see what is this? What are these arguments Odium's bringing? He's awfully confident. It's fascinating to me that he's like, yeah, I'm not going to try to even fight this. Like, I'm just coming myself and I'm going to bring, you know, I'm going to convince Queen Fen. Like, I was all about this. I don't know if this, like, was enthusiastic for y'all, but this felt cool to me because also, if you remember earlier back into this book, when we first got mention of these cities are the ones that we need to keep control of, I remember being like, is it really? Are we just going to have like four or five battles and wars, and it's whoever wins those battles is going to maintain control? It felt almost a little unfulfilling for this book. I'm hoping, and I feel that this is a change from that. Like, the battles have been awesome. I can't discount that. But this feels fitting to also have something like this, not just another battle, you know, and not a freebie. It was kind of like the army coming here was actually not real. So we're all safe. We're totally fine. We don't have to worry about this city. Check it off the list. Go help the other one. Like, it is going to be contested, but in a totally different way. And I love that. I'm really excited for this personally. I don't know if y'all feel the same, but I'm all about this.
If that happens, I'm with you, Paul. That's very exciting, and I'm excited to read it. It's not happening. This is the double Jeopardy from Odium. So what was it? Two interludes ago, Odium's like, I respect two people on the planet and they both need to be taught a lesson. And that's Dalinar and Jasnah. And off I go. And so Odium shows up here and says, hey, you saw my ruse. Good job. Now get ready for the debate, the grand debate. I don't think he's going to show up. I think this is the
time.
Right. This is he needs Jasnah, not somewhere else. In my I don't think Thalen City was it is in danger and ever was. And even though his ruse was found out, he still needs Jasnah there for another day, so he pulled this out of the hat to keep her there for another day.
Interesting. Honestly, that's a great point. And it is a, in my head, it is a coin toss.
Yeah.
Absolute coin toss of, you're right. It could be a, hey, I need you to hang out here. You have 24 hours or 48 hours to prepare. And the fate of the world depends on it. You're like, well, okay, well, I kind of do need to prepare for that.
Right.
But then you're not able to go support another group. What do you do? Do you take Queen Fen and run? Or, like, what do you do? You know? Yeah, interesting. I didn't even think of that as not being an option, of it's just a ruse, till you mentioned it. Man, I don't know what to think anymore. I think I'm still in the camp. I think this is going to happen. But it is hard to justify it with how much is going to happen in just a few days, if even now. Like, are we really going to get an Odium debate chapter on this, like, in this next day?
Yeah. Don't get me wrong. Jasnah Taravangian going at it on like philosophy and theology in front of Queen Fen, I'd be down for that.
Convince her.
That, yeah. That'd be epic. I don't think it's going to happen, though.
I think it's going to happen. I'm going to cast my vote in opposition and defiance of Trevor. And I think it will happen.
To be proven wrong once again from Paul. Elliot, do you have a tie-breaking vote?
I'm leaning more your way, Trevor, in that this seems too obvious for Odium to announce his plans like this, give her time to prepare that. Like, why do that? I don't think that quite makes sense. Will we get maybe some version of this? Perhaps. I don't know, though. It smells fishy to me.
Because we're in Thalen City?
Yeah.
The fishing town?
Wow.
Yes.
All righty. Let's jump to chapter 93. The one everyone's been waiting for. Chanarach is Shallan's mom. Okay, chapter 94. No, I'm just... Okay.
Wow.
Okay, Chanarach is Shallan's mom. Assuming that Shallan is finally a reliable narrator, which I'm going to take Brandon's word on it and say that she is, Chanarach is here, confirmed, talking to Nail in the flashback and saying, Nail saying, hey, you should kill your daughter because she's becoming a Knight's Radiant. And her mom's like, no. And then Nail's like, yes. And then she's like, fine. So then she goes and does it, except she doesn't do it, and then she dies.
It's a crazy narration, by the way. Yeah. You should kill your daughter. No. You should do it. Fine. You know, like, that's crazy. Crazy abbreviations here. Yeah, okay, real question. So this was the reveal that happened at the Dragonsteel Nexus ball that they had. This was like the reveal that they hint at a bunch of, that Chanarach is there at the wedding for Adolin and Shallan and gets ran off by Hoid and like, you're not supposed to be here, whatever, yada yada, and all these things. I know I shared that and I said that that event was canon, that they confirmed it as canon. Were y'all fully convinced from them, or were you still like, I need to see it in the book?
I was convinced before that you shared that, that I was 98% confident that Chanarach was Shallan's mom. But the fact that it's stated in the chapter here that she was at Shallan's wedding, and that's like the mic drop at the end of the chapter, I thought was quite interesting.
Yeah, this is the confirmation, right? This has been one of the, I don't know exactly when we got onto this, but it was fairly early where Trevor, you dropped on us that this was a fan theory that was out there. And so it's been hanging over our heads for years now. And I feel like here's the chapter.
I feel like I threw this back at you like Cosmere 101 or something. I dropped this theory on you or something like that.
Maybe.
I think it was around then. Yeah. In my head, it's at some point in either Oathbringer or some other adjacent book around that time.
Yeah.
I knew it was. I was in the camp of like, yeah, it's very possible, but I did not think it was going to be the case for sure. And here we are. I did once that happened at the Worldhopper ball, I was like, okay, this is like, they're really teasing this. This is not just a big practical joke. They're really teasing this, and this is really going to be in book five, or like Brandon would say, yes, that was confirmation, whether or not it's in the book. So I fully believed it. It was a matter of when, not if. And here we are. We have it. And not only is Chanarach Shallan's mother, but she also makes mention that she's going to rise and take my place, take my bond. She's eternal. And becoming her herald, like her as a herald, like taking her place, which I feel like instantly ups our, take it with a grain of salt, but considering last episode, we had the first mention of this second oath pact with Nail talking to Zeth. We get a second mention right away, like, what, 2-3 chapters afterward?
Yep.
Like, that's really quick for another mention. Are we actually heading in that direction?
Okay, so help me here. At the time of the Shallan flashback chapter, Nail says, "You're insane. What are you talking about?" To Chanarach. Right? Like, Chanarach says, she's going to take my bond. She's eternal. She can inherit it. And Nail's like, what on earth are you talking about? Current day Nail is bought in. Right?
Do you think there's another conversation we'll see between, like, in a upcoming chapter that gets him more on board of like, yeah, here's how we're going to do it. Yada, yada. Ashar said you could do this and pass on your bond or something like that. There'll be some little clause or rule in their agreement that they can, I don't know, something like that. I think that's very possible. I'm still, and what you said the last episode of, I don't think the heralds realize how crazy they are. It's really stuck with me because I'm like, okay, assuming that we can trust the heralds. Yeah, this is like, we've gotten two mentions really quick and there's only so much book left.
Right.
I think we're going down the road of Second Oath Pact, new heralds. Now, the problem is, I don't think our heralds are reliable.
Right.
So this could just be them being crazy, and that's it.
If anyone else had this idea, I would give it way more footing than Ishar, Nail, and Chinarach.
Yeah, if Yasna comes and is like, yeah, we need to reform the Oath Pact, then we're like, okay, that's what we're doing. Everyone step up. Who volunteers? But this is like, so ironically, the same chapter, we finally get the 100% confirmation from this book that Chinarach is Shallan's mother, even though we've known it for several chapters now. The same one is also the one that we get a second mention of this Oath Pact practically back to back, and are like, I don't know. We don't know if these guys are legit or like saying real things or just saying things. And so I don't know. I also haven't made up my mind on whether or not that's a path I want to see play out. If I want a second Oath Pact or not, frankly, I don't know. I don't know if I'm for it or against it.
I think the easiest path here is she's insane, they're all insane, they don't know what to talk about. I think the crazier path is she's onto something. Shallan does inherit the bond, and she is eternal. Like, hold up. Like, what if she's right?
So, let's go down that path for a second. If that's true, would that mean, because in this chapter, Chinarach says, I've already done it. I've already passed the bond to Shallan. So if that's true, Shallan kills her one page later. Does she not go back to Braze?
Is she dead? Yeah, that's a good question, actually. Shallan and Pattern don't think so. Shallan and Pattern assume that she's alive somewhere and that she attended the wedding.
Right, and there's the sort of confirmation that she attended the wedding. So is that evidence to say she's wrong?
I'd say yes, but I could also see a world where she's just a cognitive shadow without the Oath Pact.
Yeah. But
I don't know if her not being a part of the Oath Pact disqualifies her from coming back. I don't know.
Right.
I was about to say that. I don't know the mechanics of it, but in my head, she's probably still very highly invested, even if she's not technically a herald, probably. And so I think it's very possible that that is the case. Obviously we have confirmation she's not dead, you know, some way, shape, or form she was at the wedding. So
Let's talk about the wedding. We're going to see the wedding in the next Shallan chapter. We're going to go to the flashback of the wedding and see it.
No, there's no way. I think that was a special Easter egg just for the Dragonsteel Nexus folks. We are jumping through Shallan's greatest hits scenes. I will be floored if we see that scene.
What? Why? We're going to go. She's going to be like, yeah, she's at my wedding, and I selectively forgot about this, even in current day. And it's going to be like a huge thing of like, I'm still doing this today of ignoring my past. And it's going to be fifth ideal.
Wow. Okay. All of what you just said, except for the fifth ideal part, is very logical, I think, and makes a lot of sense. But I still think the most we're going to get is Shallan and Pattern talking about it. That I thought the whole wedding thing at Dragonsteel was very pitched as, this is an exclusive. You will never see this in print. You get a chance to be part of it and see canon events that aren't published anywhere else.
Perhaps.
I thought.
I do know that the point of it was to be a canonical thing. They were very clear about that. Obviously, the part where I danced with Kaladin and Dalinar and Shallan to Mr. Brightside, you know, I don't think that part's going to be in the book. But the rehearsed, planned, scripted scenes of the wedding. Oh man, I've been under the assumption it was going to be in this book, and that this was a sneak peek before, like, you know about this, you know about this before the book.
Yeah,
you have the book.
Yeah,
you already know about this. And you get to live it. You get to see it played out in front of your eyes. We also know that they're going to do more things like this, but there are plenty of off scene, like off stage moments you could do. You could do something like that. So I don't know. I do know that for a fact that they were displayed there. Brandon wrote out like these scenes, like this is written at least in his notes, and like I'm now questioning if how much was handwritten or if there was anything printed. There were also art pieces of this that they had on display, so that makes me think that it kind of looked like art you'd probably see in the book. So I'm wondering if you will get to like an art piece. Like I'm thinking we will see it is my final thing. I'm kind of rambling on.
My assumption was it wouldn't be in Wind and Truth, but it would be published at a later date. Like this was your sneak peek of I'm going to make a story deck out of this in 6 months or a year. Like I'm going to post 8 art pieces of the wedding with a canonical 100 or 10,000 word, you know, written out section of it. That's what I assumed it was going to be. But now I'm putting all my chips on the next time we see Shallan in chapter 97 is going to be, hey, I am still blocking stuff out. Current day Shallan, Formless is still here. I've got to go deal with her fifth ideal.
Man, I don't even know what to expect. I don't know if we're getting more Oath Pact. I don't know if we're getting Shallan and Adolin's wedding. In my head, if we were going to see Shallan and Adolin's wedding, I feel like we would have already seen it. I thought that's where there was going to be this reveal. My understanding was that's where we'd see get this fully certified authentication that Chanarach's Shallan's mother was going to be, we're seeing the wedding, she's there, and they make a big deal about it. But now I just don't know anything, and I don't know anymore. So there you have it.
20 some odd Cosmere books in. I don't know anything. I don't know what we're doing anymore.
Pretty much. Yeah, that's a good way to put it. Well,
Elliot, you have something in about Shallan's brothers that I did not key into. What are you talking about?
So, Channa and Nail are chatting via Sion. And then Nail hangs up the phone, and his little lackey, Drader, kind of continues on the conversation directly with Channa. And here's what he says. That they're kind of talking about the whole, well, it's kind of your fault. You were told not to have kids because you knew you were going to pass on powers to them. But he says this: all but your husband's bastard bear a terrible burden, including predispositions inherited from you. Nail says you were warned it would happen. Channa, killing the child now will be a mercy. There's two things there. One, predisposition to be radiant, I guess, for her children. That's not a shocker by any means, but it immediately got me thinking future other Devar children Radiance incoming.
Yeah. Shallan is pregnant, confirmed. That's what I just heard.
Well, that or her brothers is where I'm thinking.
I know. I'm just trying to get my bingo slot.
Yeah. But the other reveal there, one of her brothers is not of her mother. Did you catch that?
Yeah. Did we not? I guess we didn't know that.
I don't recall knowing that. And it doesn't say which. She's got 1, 2, 3, 4. Well, had 3. 4 brothers.
Correct.
Currently has 3.
Correct.
So is one of those not from Chanarach, and does that matter?
You were muted, Paul. What'd you say?
I was trying to run through the kids in my head. There's obviously Helleran, Balat, and then the other names, if they start to escape.
Jushu and Jushu.
Wikim.
Yeah. Okay, there we go. And I am thinking it's been a long time since we've talked about them. I'm not, you know, gonna say like, wow, they're really gonna come up and be super relevant right here. But you make a great point, Elliot. I did not catch any of this of, you know, okay, Shallan is super special. She's the daughter of a herald, but her brothers are too. They're sons of a herald. Shouldn't that count for something too? I don't know. They're all quite respectfully, they all need counseling, you know.
They've been you need through to go a chat lot. With Kaladin.
Yeah, exactly. So I don't know what to make of it further, but I feel like I've just been affronted with so many things this episode. Like, I feel like there should be something big with that. That's a great find. And I kind of, it's obviously legit. I guess one isn't Chanarach's child, but who and why and what's the significance? That's kind of a wild thing to just barely offhandedly mention, right?
And I think, now that I'm thinking about it, I think two of the brothers, not Balat and not Helleran, are twins.
I don't think so. I don't think so either. I think they're close in age, but I don't think they're twins. It's Wakim and Jushu that you're thinking of.
Yeah.
I don't think they're twins.
See, this is where I'd pull up Coppermind if I wasn't aggressively trying to avoid spoilers.
In like 2 months, you can, 2.5 months, you can pull up Coppermind. No, because then there'll be Isles of Emberdark spoilers. In like 8 months, you can pull up Coppermind again.
Anyway, I don't know if that's going to be important necessarily, but it might.
Anything else on the Shallan chapter? All right. Unmade are really freaky and cool and freaky. Did anyone have Spren stabbing other Spren with crystal spikes on their bingo board?
Not at all. This felt like a scene out of the like Mistborn or something darker. Like, this was creepy. Like, this was so creepy. And I'm grateful for Zeth to at least at this time instantly know this is not it. I'm getting the heck out of here.
I'm out.
Right away. Yeah. Like, I had a little bit of doubt, and those are made plenty clear to me that this is not something I want to take part in. I'm wondering, so I guess the Mistborn spoilers, will put the veil up there. So the spikes that Moash has, are these, so are the spikes here made from, so it, in Scadrial, they are made from people. Like, you kill someone and drive a spike in, and that's how you get a hemorrhagic spike. Is the same thing here, just with Spren rather than people? Like, are they it's just powered by the Spren, essentially?
That's a great question, because who you spike depends on the power that you get in the spike. And a wind Spren is mentioned by name, or not by name, by type in this chapter. Are we spiking wind Spren to get Windrunner powers? I mean, that checks out to me.
I don't know if it's fully that linear, but that's my understanding. Is you spike Spren to get investiture. I don't know if it's a direct, like, you get this surge, because they aren't all high Spren. Is that right?
Correct. They are not all high Spren.
Some of this could be, this is a new thing on Roshar, to my understanding. This could be experimenting. They're figuring out the same questions we're having right now. It could be less linear of like, you spike a Skybreaker Spren, and then you put that spike into somebody, and they can use those surge binding abilities. It might not be that linear, because there's things like a Flame Spren and stuff like that, like low Spren that are spiked. I don't know if they're just decor or if they're being hard. I don't know. But my understanding is that they are getting the investiture in these spikes by spiking the Spren and killing them. My understanding.
What's everything that, guy's,
that I've understood from Mistborn.
What's that guy's name in Alloy of Law? He'd appreciate this unmade. The guy who spikes his people and strings them up on the tunnels. I don't remember his name.
Oh.
It'll come to me later. Anyway.
I'm not quite ready to make the jump to Hemallergy quite yet. It seems logical based on what we know. It would not surprise me at all now to learn that this unmade is draining powers out of these Spren somehow and doing something with it. I was also thinking maybe it's just you need the crystal spikes to physically pin a Spren, because Zeth is in the physical realm and he's seeing Spren apparently trapped in the physical realm. So maybe you just need like a previously imbued spike from some other source in order to be able to do this. And there's not necessarily magical powers being drained here by Hemallergy, but there could be. There could be, I think.
Elliot, did you have anything to say about Chapter 92, which was dedicated to describing the city?
Not really. 92. I like Chapter 92. It was a fun little break where Zeth just falls up really high and then falls down really low and then enters into the place and sees the city. That was it.
Alrighty. Chapter 95. We have Adolin and then Zeth and then Adolin again. Let's go for Zeth first because we were just talking about him. What's he going to decide? Is he going to listen to Nail and try to take Yezrian's spot? Maybe if that works, perhaps, or not. He's talking to his Spren, and apparently he knows what Gavilar was looking for with the becoming a herald words back from the prologue of this book.
That was actually really interesting to me, and a callback to the very beginning of all of this. Zeth is wrestling here with, can I become a herald? Can I even live for eternity? Part of what the very opening section of this is Zeth wasn't certain he wanted to keep living. He's kind of trying to accomplish his mission so that he can not have to hear the voices screaming at him in the shadows all the time. And so can he even accept a mantle that has him living for eternity? I don't know. But then, there's a bit in here. I don't have it right in front of me. Oh, no, here it is. We know Gavilar was looking so hard for the most important words a man can say. We found out later Gavilar was trying to become a herald, trying to become immortal, kind of that classic discovery immortality and I'll have all the power trip. And then here's what they talk about in this chapter. Let's see. This is his friend talking, and he says, it would require taking a piece of honor, forging from it a new sword, saying the most important words a person can say, and joining the heralds. The words, Zeth said, I cannot be told them. Yes, the Spren said, animatedly gesturing with both hands. You see, you understand. I do. And he knew he had the right words inside him. Like, there's our answer. We asked for a long time, what are the most important words a man can say? I think we had a couple different answers to that over the time. And apparently Zeth just knows what to say and how to become a herald.
Are they not, I will hold back the darkness. I will, like that scene that we saw them becoming heralds, and
the pledge that they said.
Yeah. I will protect this land. I will hold back the darkness, or whatever they said. Is it not that?
It could be. But how does Zeth know that?
I don't know.
We do also see, I don't know if this is applicable, like the I will hold back the darkness, I think they all said, but don't they all say something like unique as well? That's my understanding.
Yes,
that's
they all
what I remember.
Twist it slightly, yes.
Yeah. And I know that's a huge thing with the radiant words, like the first one's the same and then kind of gets more personal, more, you know, your own flair on it. Could be that he knows what that is for him. And to be fair, he wasn't there to see that those scenes either. Like some of our characters have seen that, so they may know those words, but it's like the sentiment of it's not necessarily saying the words out loud, but like the moment and the impact and the meaning it has in your life at that time is like the thing, you know? So this feels like one of those times where Sanderson is taunting us. It's like I know the words. You know, we're not going to see the words this next chapter. Like, we're going to get maybe a couple more chapters of, but the words, they're right there mm-hmm. on the tip of my tongue, you know? And then it'll be like the last chapter or something. We'll get it. I'm hoping we see whatever this is soon, though. I don't know how much longer I can wait.
Anything else on this Zeth section? He's trying to straddle the line between Nail and Kaladin, and I don't know if it's going to work out for him. I think he needs to choose.
Yeah, I think we'll see. I'm very curious where Zeth's storyline is going to keep going here, because he does decide that he's going to take up this challenge. He is going to become a herald, but he's not going to fully do it in the way that Nail wants him to. He's also going to take on some of Kaladin's advice and try to make some of his own choices and push back the negative thoughts in his head, those kinds of things. So he tries to take both paths. We'll see if it works or not.
You want to know what I'm wrestling with? I think Zeth would make a fantastic herald. But I don't want him to become a herald. I want him to go retire on a little farm with and some sheep.
Dance with the sheep, yeah.
Yeah, that's
all. Molly 2, Molly 3, Molly 4.
Exactly. Yeah, that's what I want. But man, if he wouldn't make like a prime candidate for a herald. Oh man. So
no, he's going to be Zile 2.0. He's going to be the grumpy old sword master. He's like, leave me alone, you kids. You don't know what I've been through, et cetera, et cetera.
Yeah.
All right. And last but not least, we have Adolin and Gezimal, who I did not know this character was not even introduced until this book, and I'm a kind of a big fan of him. He has a really cool conversation with Adolin about doing a soldier's duty and believing in the cause, even if it's a little unjust for yourself. You still need to do your work and keep your head down and stuff like that. I have a quote to read, but what'd you guys think of this conversation?
Just to set the scene really quickly, if folks haven't read this chapter recently, what I think all went down here, because yeah, this is a newer character I wasn't quite fully tracking. Gezimal got demoted because Yanagon went out into battle and he wasn't supposed to do that. And Gezimal supported Yanagon. He went out with Yanagon to help protect him and fight with him if they needed to. According to the law, Gezimal was supposed to stop Yanagon. And so Adolin's all kind of been out of shape about this because he's going, but Gezimal made the right decision. Yanagon tried to do something honorable, and Gezimal made the correct decision to ignore the law and back his leader in doing the right thing. But everyone involved here, Yanagon, Gezimal, all the Azish people, are like, no, sorry, the law is strict, but has to be followed. It's there for a reason. And even though Gezimal did something right, it was unlawful, and therefore he has to be punished. And even Gezimal says, I knew what I was doing. I knew what I did. I chose it with the consequence in mind. I want to serve the consequence. And Adolin can't quite reconcile that.
Yeah. And it leads into this beautiful quote. It might be my favorite quote in the book so far. And here we go. It's kind of long, so buckle up. Do you ever love something that's flawed, Adolin? Isn't everything flawed? I suppose it is, Gezimal said. Well, I love the Empire. I love that our people have stood for thousands of years against invaders with more shards. I love that we have produced writing and art, standing as a light against the twin tides of ignorance and lies. I love that in Aesir, a thief can become emperor, that any person who just dedicates themselves can take the tests and rise high. I love the way we have reasons for what we do. Yes, the weight of those reasons might create books full of bureaucracy. Yes, it might get unwieldy. Yes, it might hurt you now and then. But everything you love is going to hurt you now and then, because it is flawed. There should obviously be a threshold for being hurt. We haven't reached mine yet. The laws say that a man who did what I did needs to be punished. Maybe the law should change, but I accept what has happened. Because, Adolin, I guarantee that every other soldier in our military, even those who think I was a monster for putting the Emperor in danger, understands. Accepting your punishment with decorum is a mark of respect for the thing we all love. And this is Adolin's internal thoughts after that. Adolin started back across the courtyard pondering. Did he love things that hurt him? Maybe not something, but certainly someone. A father. It might be the best passage of Wooden Truth so far for me. I am a huge fan of that. And Gezimal willing to accept the flawed system to protect his empire, and like, that is really cool.
I can agree that this is fantastic. And this is probably the quickest a fairly unknown character has like shot up in like notoriety and how outstanding he is. Like, normally we had the opposite. I'm remembering back to Way of Kings, where it's like you're introduced to some new character, but it's the boss, Gaz's boss, Larimar or whatever, and he's even worse. You know, it's like the opposite. Maybe I'm mixing those names up, but anyways. But Gezimal comes out and is just amazing, and then drops these like awesome like truth bombs, you know, stands up and accepts punishment and like for doing something that was right. Crazy good. I agree. This is definitely a top quote in this book by a character who. Who's this guy again? Like,
right, exactly.
Absolutely crazy. Yeah, absolutely crazy, and, but so good.
And the shard bearer guy has that epic one-liner before running in with his shard plate. The Azish are awesome. He's like, for Prime and people, and turns and runs at a thunderclass and dies. Like, the Azish are epic.
True.
Anything else?
I think that's what I had for these chapters. Lots in them. There's probably more we could have talked about, but we've gone for a ways here. Things are happening here on Roshar, no doubt.
All right, Paul, next week we are in chapters 96 through, what was your guess, 100?
I said that was a foolish guess. I'm gonna actually amend that to say, like, I don't 97. We're just doing two chapters.
No, we're 96 through interlude 16 for next week.
Quite ambiguous.
So let's reconvene next week. Thanks for joining me, Paul and Elliot.
See you then.
Toodles. See you in a new day. Well, almost.